Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is artist James Grashow. Since the 1960s, Grashow has been an active artist, illustrator, sculptor, and woodcut artist with amazing versatility. He's especially known today for his large-scale installations made of cardboard. Cardboard cut and made into figures on an incredibly detailed scale and filled with whimsy. One of his most recent pieces, the corrugated fountain based on the Trevi Fountain in Rome, complete with King Neptune, soaring dolphins, mermaids and mermen, riding fishes, has become the subject of the documentary film Cardboard Bernini, a new film in 2012. Grashow's works are a part of the collections of the Museum of Modern Art, the New York Public Library, and Library of Congress. He's done commissions for New York University and a variety of major companies and regional museums. His work has ranged from illustrations for the New York Times, Rolling Stone, and Playboy to album covers for Jethro Tull, the Yardbirds, and Deep Purple, to name a few. And he's also done ballet sets for San Francisco Ballet and the Spoleto Festival. For his visit to Tulsa, he's created an installation called the Corrugated Alphabet Project. It'll be on display tomorrow through February 21st at the Alexander Hogue Gallery on the TU campus. He's created larger-than-life letters of the alphabet, 26 letters in total, that the viewers will be able to actually walk through and admire from all sides, which is an ongoing theme in most of his large-scale installations. James Grashow joins me today here on Studio Tulsa. James Grashow, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here. It's great to be here.
Over the last week, you have been creating a wonderland of letters in the Alexander Hogue Gallery, the corrugated alphabet. And this has been an ongoing project where you create really imaginative works out of old cardboard.
Well, sometimes old cardboard, sometimes very new cardboard.
And for viewers who will walk into this gallery, it will be like I walked into it while it was under construction, and I felt I got a sense of what the characters on Sesame Street think when they're saying today's broadcast is sponsored by the letter N.
Right, absolutely.
Because you have these letters of immense, smaller, medium sizes, right. Just filled with
We have a 16-foot high L. Right?
Yeah. So. And you're walking through this, and this is sort of a trademark of what you like to do in some of these installations is sort of put the viewer in the environment.
Well, what I love to do is I love to try to create what I think of as an entry point, you know, something that really invites a viewer in, an area where that's incredibly accessible. Like if you build a city, you know what I mean, or make giant figures or giant letters. But once the people are inside, you want to give them an art experience, make them experience space and form in a way that they've never experienced it before.
And, of course, you're using everyday materials, which people think of as discard a lot of time or just packing material, and you're creating artwork with it.
Well, cardboard is an unbelievable material to work with. First of all, it's everybody's favorite, everybody's first toy is, I think, a cardboard box. You know, so cardboard is phenomenal, and it's forgiving. It's so cheap. It's so everywhere. It's mistake-proof. It's so grateful, you know, to have a chance to be something other than garbage that it becomes a perfect play partner.
Now, this is your first time to do a corrugated alphabet.
Right.
And it looks like, you know, as you walk through, you see a variety of fonts.
Right.
So you get to have fun with typeset.
The word fonts is a great idea. It's great. Yeah. Oh my God. You know, yeah, I just, you know, you, I wanted to, it really, it, the whole idea, it's really, it's not so much about the letter. It's about the space in between the letters. You know, so when I was young, somebody once said that the space between the letters is as important or more important than the letter itself. And I always found that really unbelievably intriguing. And when I started doing this, if you made all the things the same fonts, you know, it would be very static. But to make them uppercase, lowercase, giant size, small size, it started to articulate the space between the letters, you know, much, much more. It made it really unbelievably exciting.
And there's italics as well, yeah.
There's italics, right?
You know, yeah.
The little dot over the I is fantastic.
Uh-huh. You know, so. No, it looks like a lot of fun. And I'm watching you had students helping you construct this over the last week. And watching them work in it, it's just like there was just, it was almost like these college students were back in third grade or something.
Well, that's the way, I mean, I've done workshops pretty much all over the country, and you work with college kids, and sometimes you work with preschool kids, and sometimes you work with kids, and they come in with their parents or their grandparents, and whenever they see cardboard, there's no instruction necessary. Everybody loves cardboard. They just jump on it, you know, and start making things. It's, as I said, it's a natural playmate. Yeah. I think it has the same DNA as a human being has. It's a material that's very aware of its mortality, you know, and is, you know, aspires to be something eternal, but it knows it's going to be garbage, right?
Right. Now, when you work with these residencies, a lot of times, I know some ages you've done cardboard-sauruses like dinosaurs or dragons, right, and things.
Right.
But in some of your own work, when you're working with cardboard, we're talking about incredibly intricate design work. And, well, one of the most recent ones you've done is called the Corrugated Fountain.
Right.
And this is like one of these grand European
Absolutely
fountains,
right,
with, you know, King Neptune,
right,
and you know, dolphins leaping out of the water.
Mermaids,
merman, right, riding a
sea
fish.
Horses.
That's right.
Right. You know, everything.
And it's like you would expect to see it, a great European fountain.
Right.
And it's made out of corrugated cardboard,
right,
complete down to just about every same detail that a stonemason would make,
right,
work on making that fountain.
The whole idea behind that fountain was that, you know, water and cardboard don't mix. You know, so the idea of making a cardboard fountain is just a totally ridiculous idea. You know, so and building it, like trying to make a fountain something eternal, and the eternity of it is impossible. You know, so the whole idea of doing that, I worked about 5 years building the fountain. The whole idea at the end was to take it out, set it outside in a terrific venue, and then have the weather and rain, you know, wash it away. Most artists, when they do a piece of work, they talk about process. It's always about process, but the process is always from beginning to finish. Nobody really ever addresses the idea of process from beginning to the absolute end. So the idea of making a cardboard fountain was a beautiful way to talk about the entire thing, from birth to death and beyond, from before birth to, you know, to after.
And that's something artists really don't ever talk about anyway,
right,
even on a site-specific installation,
right,
what happens afterwards.
Right.
I think there's just this feeling among a lot of the artist community that this is going to live on somehow,
right,
and maybe a few will, but most will be shown once, and that's it.
Right. Well, everything goes, you know.
Yeah.
The World Trade Center comes down. You know, the Afghan Buddhas in in Afghanistan that were there for like 2,000 years. I mean, everything sort of disintegrates in time and space. And the idea that I was the architect of the destruction of something was. And also, I'm 71 years old, so,
you're starting to think about these things.
It's something I'm trying to deal with every day, you know.
Well, it's interesting that as an artist, especially at your age,
right,
you're thinking about, well, what am I going, you know, what can I create that will live beyond me? And
right,
you're creating works that are basically ephemera,
yeah,
in many ways.
The thing is, you think of yourself, you know, the work, it's not only the work that lives on, but you think of yourself as a vehicle, you know, and you throw yourself into the pond, you know, and the ripples that the work that you create, you don't know where they're going to go. You never know what shore they're going to reach. So it's not only the work, but even working with students and building the corrugated and building the alphabet with everybody working, maybe that'll last for longer. The ripples that create might last longer than any work that I could do.
Well, right, from what I could see from the students, they were having a lot of fun. So,
were,
I mean, it will last,
yeah,
in their memory.
But I just want to say something, too, you know, about the fountain and the idea of working on it and doing every detail and making it so incredibly complex. You could do something that you know is going to be destroyed, and you could do it in a week or in a half an hour. But when it would go, you know, when it would finally be destroyed, it would be relatively meaningless. You know, the idea is to put every single thing you have into it, so that when it goes, it registers. It's meaningful for you, you know, so that you have the full experience.
Now, you've had this installation at a couple different places. What was,
right,
the reaction when the thing started to break down?
Right. Well, it sort of made a small tour of the, you know, it was shown, I think, in Pittsburgh, and then it was shown in, it opened in Roanoke, Virginia, and it was shown in New York, and then it went to a museum in Connecticut where we installed it outside. And actually, there was a... there wasn't any rain for the first 2 weeks of the show, and I didn't think it was even going to rain. And then all of a sudden, it was a deluge, and the piece literally exploded in the rain. It was phenomenal.
So it was a quick death.
It was a quick but unbelievably rich death. But the thing is, people who weren't even interested in a piece of work or wouldn't be interested in artwork suddenly became very interested. They couldn't believe that something was going to be that I had worked on for so long was going to be allowed to disintegrate.
Now, your curators, did they understand what you were?
They got it.
So.
They absolutely got it. It was part of the whole presentation of the piece. And actually, there's a documentary film called Cardboard Bernini, mm-hmm. that documents the whole piece from the beginning, you know, to the absolute end. So, and they're going to actually show that here tonight, uh-huh. So which should be fantastic.
All right. Well,
it's a difficult experience to watch yourself on over and over, to see you die over and over and over again.
Now, this whole idea of creating a landscape for people to enter, whether it be a large scale landscape or even a small, like some of your smaller work, you really ask your viewers to enter a world.
Right.
That seems to be the focus of a lot of your work.
Right. Well, I think you want to draw people in, but it's... I think what I'm really trying to deal with is the relationship between man, mortality, man and nature. You know, who am I? You know, how do I fit in this whole thing, in this whole scheme? So it's impossible. Sometimes you work very, very small, you know, like Gandhi weaving. And then sometimes you wake up and you feel, you know, you want to feel your muscles and you just want to do something unbelievably big. So... And sometimes you wake up, you don't know. Sometimes you wake up, it's just difficult to put your paint pants on. You know, so.
Right. Well, take us back to when you first started thinking of the 3D look, which is a lot of your work is 3D. Right. And give us a sense of how you got started down that path. Because, you know, as I was talking to you before, I said, you know, when I first saw your work, I said, Red Grooms, obviously, this is another artist that works in the same way, whether it's a little diorama that sort of takes you into a scene or a large scale. I mean, you do the large scale installations where you're actually walking through them.
Right.
And you're walking under the Big M.
Right. I love that, the Big M. You know, or you could walk under the, or through the W or the Big Q, right? You know? So, you know, it just starts, you know, your relationship to material, your relationship to what you do, it's very personal. You know, some artists, you know, like deal with stone and some artists deal with, you know, wood. You know, I've always loved, you know, that the lightness and the accessibility of the cardboard. And I think originally when I went to art school, I wanted to be a painter. And I had this idea. I built all of these canvases, and then I thought I would make a model of a, you know, build like a papier-mâché and cardboard model. And then I would take the canvas, I would paint this cardboard model, then I would paint on my canvas, then I would paint on the model, and they would keep on going back and forth from model to the, you know, to the canvas. I thought it was a really good idea, you know. But I became so interested in making the model that the canvas became, you know, really meaningless to me. So, and then I started thinking that you could sort of create a walkthrough painting, you know, build a load of models, you know what I mean? And, and then I found myself building forests and, you know, little cottages in the woods and started doing environments that were really these entry points into a painting and into space, right?
Yeah, and I could see where that got really interesting. Were you getting feedback from your teachers saying, well, the painting's okay, but I really like this?
You never know exactly where you're going or what you're doing. And a lot of teachers said they couldn't understand they said that I was making a millstone around my neck. You know, that where was I going to store this? What was I going to do with everything that I was making? You know, this. You know,
but you knew you were on the right track.
You never know. You know, you never know. But if you're an artist, what you're essentially are is you're a detective on the trail of yourself. You know, and you just have to keep on. You just have to keep on traveling, right? Yeah. You know, no matter where it takes it. It's thrilling to be able to stand out on the ledge and do something that you don't know means anything. You know, it's like the letters. I feel it's thrilling to do that, and the impact and what it means is still something that's really revealing itself to me. I've just come from Connecticut, and I'm my town is right on the border of Newtown, you know, so the impact of what had happened there has just been, you know, unbelievable. And all the time that that was happening, I was thinking about doing the alphabet and doing that, and I was counting all the time, counting, you know, how many days would it take to do a letter? You know, how many days would I have to be in Tulsa to do anything, to, you know, to finish the 26 letters that were... Only when I was here and working on the piece did it occur to me that it was 26 letters, you know what I mean? And
oh,
there were
goodness.
26 people killed in Newtown. So I don't know if the cosmic event or what means anything, but...
you can't help but take some personal significance out of that, whether it's coincidence or not.
Right. So I'm saying, so there's always, you're always in process, you know, you're always doing and working, but the meaning of what you do is not clear all the time, you know. So anyway, that's...
We should invite people to come out to see the Corrugated Alphabet Project, which will be on display tomorrow through February 21st. There'll be a lecture on my guest today. James Grashow will be lecturing on his work at 4 o'clock tomorrow at the Jerry Jones Lecture Hall. And then you can meet him, and there'll be a reception following. And you get to walk through this really imaginative exhibit, which really exemplifies a lot of his work. Just... You seem to have a very playful sense about a lot of what your work is about. It's about having fun.
Right. I think the playfulness is a cover for a very dark, you know, morbid sensibility. <you know? laughs>
Well, right. Certainly, I mean, it's hard to see where that morbid sensibility comes from, you know, other than just maybe the...
My wife sees it.
Well, I'm going to talk about some of your other work. You know, we talked about these... installation sort of pieces where you enter the art, and there are some pieces like you've done a complete, well, this is a number of years ago when the World Trade Center were standing, a complete skyline of Manhattan, completely painted, just incredibly detailed.
And
you've
actually,
also created city.
In that piece, they had a they had Twiggy, the water skiing squirrel. You know, it was set up in a pond that would water ski around the installation. It was wild. Yeah.
And you've also created imaginary cityscapes that you can actually walk through.
Right. And all the buildings were anthropomorphic, and you know. But again, that was all made out of cardboard and fabric and dyed black and white fabric. You know, so it was wild. It was great.
Now I want to talk about a series that I think is just really cool. At first glance, they look like a bouquet of flowers. There'll be a vase. And as you come up closer, it says, what are those things on the leaves? And they're sometimes buildings or all sorts of things.
Right.
And this is sort of a series of, I guess, created structures involving, you know, floral and like, for example, you did one on Telluride where it's like the Victorian Main Street.
Right. Well, the whole thing.
Yeah. And instead of a leaf laying out, it's basically the basis for a series of structures on top of the leaves.
Yeah, so we call them, I've been calling them houseplants.
Houseplants.
So I make houseplants bouquets, you know, where they, instead of the bud, there's a beautiful Victorian home with everything on it, with, you know, all the lattice work and the gingerbreading and, you know, everything, all the little shingles, curtains in the windows, you know, but really, really tiny. So actually, I'm a man in search of scale, either too big or too large. I don't know.
Well, and, you know, you're really doing some intricate work on these. I mean, I think for listeners, think of, you know, the holiday Victorian sets, maybe knocked down to about 2 to 3 inches with the same level of detail or perhaps even more detail than you would see there.
I think when you change scale on something, like if you blow the alphabet up to a giant side, it changes everybody's relationship to it. But the same thing happens if you go the other way. If you make it really, really teeny, you know, people look at it in an entirely different way. And I love the idea that you come into a place and you see this giant bouquet of flowers, and then you walk closer, and then you say, "Whoa!" I love that instant when you know, when somebody sees it beyond what it presents itself to be.
And that's deliberate in your eye to be something that could be overlooked as you walk in, and then your eye catches it and says, "Wait a minute, something's off."
Right, and also, you know what I mean? It's there's this great. Sometimes you, as I was saying before, you love to do something contemplative and slow, which you just sit at your desk and and with a little razor blade make and there was a saying I think I've always loved. It's, you know, inchy by inchy, Leonardo da Vinci. So that's when you're doing the house plants. You know, sometimes you just can do, you know, maybe an inch a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and when I started doing it, I think I was doing the giant installations first. And each installation would take 3 to 4 years. And I thought I needed a smaller project that I could do in maybe once every couple of weeks. So I came up with the house plans. And it was a long learning curve, but the better I got at doing it, you know, the more intricate the plants became. So now they take 2 and 3 years, you know, so what did you do?
My guest today is James Grashow. His latest project made in conjunction with the University of Tulsa School of Art
who were phenomenal to work with, by the way, phenomenal.
Is called the Corrugated Alphabet Project, and it will be on display tomorrow through February 21st at the Alexander Hogue Gallery. Well, one thing I noticed that you've done a lot of graphic work, which you kind of haven't done a whole, or at least you're not showing a lot of it over the last 10 years or so.
Actually, when I go back to Connecticut, I have a show in Connecticut of prints and stuff. So,
so you continue to do it.
It's, you know, at one time in my life, the graphics were the most important thing. You know, they were I did a lot of illustration for everything from Playboy to the New York Times, album mm-hmm. covers, and, you know, I did everything. So, and the sculpture, the graphics were almost a way to support my sculpture habit, right? But now things have turned, and it's the sculpture really that leads everything.
I'm always interested in when an artist has that two track where it's the fine art and the commercial art, which, you know, used to be you couldn't transcend
right,
that. Now
right.
I think that's easier to do.
Well, the thing is,
what came first?
Just the idea of wanting to do something, and then the idea that you had to survive in some way. You know? I always had this thing where I was always very good with tools, and I could make a woodcut, and when I did a woodcut, everybody would go, whoa, that's, you know. So I decided I would try to, you know, see if I can make a living out of that,
mm-hmm.
and fortunately it worked out. Right. So
how did you get you're doing albums in what, the late 60s, early 70s?
I did a lot of stuff. Jethro Tull stand up. And actually on that album, I think I did it maybe 40 years ago, but there's the lead singer is this guy Ian Anderson,
yeah.
in the cover he's sitting there and I have his hands clasped. And if you count the fingers, there are 11 fingers on it. You know, so I still get letters today, 40 years later, ask me why there was the 11th finger. And the truth is, I just kept doing fingers. I don't know. I was in finger rapture. You know,
I would imagine that album's very collectible now.
Yeah, I think it is. I'm saying people, it's something, every once in a while you're fortunate, you do something that becomes almost iconic. And that was a great thing to do. But I did a piece probably once a month for the New York Times for about 30 years. So mm-hmm. I've done a lot of things. I did the original New York Marathon poster, you know, for mm-hmm. All woodcuts, and a commemorative giant piece for the Statue of Liberty that they, you know, when that had its anniversary. So I've done a lot of woodcuts. I love cutting the wood. Is so unbelievably sensual, and I use a wood called Swiss pear wood. That's I love my wife, my grandkids. I love cardboard, but Swiss pear wood is right up there.
What is special about that particular wood?
If you cut on everything is different. If you can cut on a piece of pine wood, right, and if mm-hmm. you go like a cross grain, it splinters and shatters. This wood is so fantastic. If you go cross grain, round, whatever, it holds up absolutely beautiful. And if your tools are sharp enough, you know, and your ears are good enough, when you cut, you can actually hear it. You hear it cutting. It's great.
Wow, what an incredible experience.
I get the chills thinking about it.
Now, right. Now it seems like, though, you're really into sculpture now,
right.
Though. That seems to be
I love to work. I love, you know, I'm saying sometimes you work big, sometimes you work small, but I love, and I feel unbelievably blessed that I have something that I'm passionate about, and that's...
It's interesting, having known that woodcut background, you can see the woodcut background in everything you do in your sculpture level, because you're really, you're doing it in a different way, but you're doing really the same, a lot of the same techniques.
Right. Well, once I built, I think one of the early pieces I did, I built a giant ship, you know, almost like the Queen Mary, with an island and a lighthouse and millions of waves, right? So, but each wave was everything, even the decking on the boat were made from like little prints, you know. All the rocks on the lighthouse were made from prints, and all of the waves, which filled up a gigantic space, you know, were made from maybe three giant 6-foot woodcuts of waves. So everybody, if you do prints, you can number them like 1 out of 30, 1 out of 100, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think the real thing with prints is you can make a billion of them. I mean, you know, you can make a billion leaves. You know, you can make five, you know, maybe 30 leaves, and then print them a billion times. Or you can make an entire ocean out of maybe 3 waves, 5 waves. Right. So
now, do woodcuts hold up better than most other printing devices? I don't know.
Everything holds. What do you mean, to print them?
For printing multiples.
It all depends. It all depends. But you can get a load out of them. Enough to satisfy anybody. You know?
Right. And for what you're doing there, it doesn't matter if it's deterring a little bit, because it's just creating diversity.
Right. Yeah? Sometimes if you have to embrace. You have to embrace human error. Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the greatest statements in the entire world, is like human error. Right?
That's sort of our way of doing about anything, isn't it?
Anything, right? I mean, you strive for perfection, but you know that that's impossible. So, you know, you have to, you know, I have a friend of mine who's a carpenter, and he always said, if you make a mistake, you can never say mistake. You never say you've made a mistake. You always have to say it's nuance of process.
Right? Nuance of process. Yeah, I was going to say modification, maybe. Like, it's a modification, it's not a mistake.
Right, I love that.
Yeah. A nuance of process. Remember that, everybody. Right. My guest today is James Grashow. His latest installation, the Corrugated Alphabet Project, will be on display at the Alexander Hogue Gallery tomorrow through February 21st. There'll also be a lecture and showing of a film about his work in creating the Corrugated Fountain, which has been his most recent art piece. And as you mentioned earlier, he says when you go back to Connecticut, you'll be showing some graphic work.
I'll be showing prints, and also the movie is going to be shown, you know, a lot around the East Coast. And, you know, it's been in film festivals, so I'm traveling a little bit with it to do a little Q&A afterwards. So it'll be great.
All right. Well, we look forward to that, and I hope a lot of people come out to the Hogue Gallery because it's kind of like being a kid.
Right.
It's
it seems like it'd be perfect
whether you are a kid or not.
Right. It'd be perfect in a college, you know, to be wandering through the letters. Right.
Right. So, yeah. Well, James Grashow, thanks very much for your time.
Thank
I appreciate
you. It. It was absolutely great to be here. Thank you.
Sculptor and woodcut artist James Grashow speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His latest installation, the Corrugated Alphabet Project, will be on a display at the Alexander Hogue Gallery beginning tomorrow through February 21st. He'll be lecturing on his work tomorrow afternoon at 4 in the Jerry Jones Lecture Hall, and an opening reception will follow at 5 o'clock at the gallery. Information at 918-631-2739. By the way, you can see more of his work at jamesgrashow.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.